Okay, chapter 3, Perek Gimel. V'hine kol b'chinas u'madrega mishalish elu. Nefesh, ruach, neshama. Every one, we finished last week by mentioning that here in Tanya we are dividing, or we are giving three different levels to the neshama. Nefesh, ruach, and neshama. And we'll stick to these three. Each one of them, Kelula me'eser bechinas, they have in them 10 bechinas. There isn't a real perfect English translation to the word bechina, but you can say levels or categories or bechinas. And these 10 are keneged eser sfiras al yoinos. They correspond to the supernal 10 sfiras shenishtal shulu mehen, that the ones in our neshama, they come down from the 10 spheres of Atzilus. Let's stop over here. So this is, first of all, a very big klal, a very important rule, which is that there are many, many worlds, but they are all linked one to the other. And really, they should all mirror one the other, if things are the way they should be. But just lamashul, when we speak about a mirror, so if you put up a sefer in front of a mirror, what's going to happen? It's going to look mamash the opposite. You won't be able to read the letters. That when we speak about one world reflecting the world above it, a reflection doesn't have to mean that everything is mamash the way it is in the higher world. It can be everything is exactly the opposite, and that's also a perfect reflection. For example, gravity in this world takes everyone down. There is gravity in the ruchnizdika world. Where does gravity schlep you to? Up. Mamish. I don't think that people are walking with their heads down, but the concept of gravity, the concept of everything being, so to say, attracted to its source, begashmius, meaning that everything is attracted towards Mother Earth. People, things are neshamas, malachim, and who there's worlds, they also have these rules, but in a ruchnistic way. Everything is attracted towards its source, means that everything is going up. Mamish. There was actually a Talmudic story of one person who had a near-death experience. There's a word for this. I don't remember the exact word in English. All these people that they say that they passed away and they came back. So the Gemara writes once about a person who passed away for a couple of moments, a couple of minutes. He came back and he was asked, "What did you see?" So he said, "I saw an upside down world." Those were his words. Olam hafuch re'isi. And he explained, he says, those who are lowly here are very lofty there. The ones who are great here are lowly there. So whether it was his father or another colleague says, "You did not see an olam hafuch. We live in the olam hafuch. We live in the topsy-turvy world." But just to clear that, shenashtal shulu mehen is a very important klal. So from the King Solomon says, Mipsari, from the way our bodies work, we can have an insight as to how godliness works. Mamash, Mipsari Echsavaka. Because God made the worlds in such a way that even though that we are unable to go straight to Ruchnizdika worlds, it would overwhelm us, but we can extrapolate Mamash from the Gashmias, how things work with Ruchnias. Now there's a caveat to that, and that's an important caveat, which is that when we are in Golos, and we are now in Golos, this Sheneshtal Shulumihem becomes corrupted. I'll give you an example. All of the halachas in the Torah, even halachas that deal with the physical functioning of things in this world, there are many statements that Chazal made that Begashmias, right now, what they say, it doesn't work that way. We can begin with astronomy. Astronomy is one area in the Torah that very little was recorded in the Mishnah and in the Gemara. It's called the secret, soid ho'ibur, the secret of making of the calendar. Not secret because Kabbalah secret, secret because it was never put on a book. It was one part of the oral Torah that until the Rambam was oral Torah. That means that there was a group of people that knew it, and they selected who they will teach it to, and they knew it, and that's the way it went back from Moshe Rabbeinu And there's a reason why it was never put in the Mishnah, because when something is written down, the good is that it's written down. The bad is that everyone that will read it might come to a little bit of a different conclusion. Now, when if it's not written down, you have the same challenge, but...
A worse challenge.
Or it'll be forgotten, or completely corrupted. Agreed. Oh. But when it comes to other areas in the Torah, what happened, Taka? Things were written down. And then you had Hillel says kosher, Shammai said treif. There are many things in this world that if you ask a person, what does the Torah say about it? Depends who you ask. Going back for thousands of years, this one says good, this one says bad. Such a fact doesn't challenge the emes and the continuity of the Torah. And where the proof? After thousands of years, where there's so many arguments, in halacha, we're still keeping the mitzvahs. True, not exactly the same. So we put the mezuzah up slanted, the sfardim put it up straight. You had the halak bet Yosef, and then we have Lubavitch Shechita. But somehow, there's so much more similarity than dissimilarity, and everyone really wants to do what God wants. No one has their own agenda. So it worked with the gray area, but it's still here. There was one thing that Chachamim understood, that if there will be a machloikis, it will be the end of Yiddishkeit, the calendar. Imagine, put this in the context of Shabbos, that you have Shabbos on one day, I have Shabbos on another day. Then they're finished. Then the division amongst the two opinions become so big, you can't bridge the gap. Imagine Yom Kippur. Imagine, I keep Yom Kippur on Thursday, but you think you have to follow that opinion and the cheshbon of the end Friday. The Gemara actually records a story that the head of the Sanhedrin, Rabban Gamliel, if I'm not mistaken, and Rabbi Yeshua, one of the main rabbis there who was not the leader, they had an argument when to make Rosh Hashanah. And when Rabbi Yeshua ruled, unlike the head of the Sanhedrin made an edict that you are obligated to travel to me on your Yom Kippur, on a donkey, with your wallet, with food. He commanded him to be machalal, his Yom Kippur, in public. Why? And he told him, because if you will, we can argue. But halacha l'maisa, we got to pick one side. If you will, so to say, implement for you or for your community your calendar, which is one day off, he says it will be the end of the Torah. They understood that. It's amazing. They understood how much machlekes we can tolerate. I'm speaking about good machlekes. Machlekes in halacha. And where so since they didn't want us to have two calendars, they felt that containing the way of making the calendar in a select few people, they can trust them, like Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, even though they argued. But they'll have enough respect that if this person is the head of the Sanhedrin, then we're going to follow what he said no matter what. And there was never a time in our history that de facto we had different calendars. That's a story. There was an argument. When it comes to other areas in Allah, if there's an argument, each one follows through all the way into action. Right? This is kosher, that's not kosher. Period. Not a theoretical argument. We don't know how to have a theoretical argument. The Gemara is all theoretical, but that trickles down into Allah. So the calendar was not allowed to trickle down into Allah. But there is machlekes. And what is the machlekes in the calendar is about? It's about how quick does the sun move? How quick does the moon move? And here the question is, how can there be a machlekes on a physical phenomenon? I accept there's a machlekes whether this is kosher or not. That's a ruchnius that you think. But an argument regarding the movements of the heavens, how can that be? Does that not mean that one of them is wrong? What's the answer to that? How long does it take for the sun to come back to the same spot? Does it take 365 and a quarter of a day exactly? Or is it 365 and an inexact something? Machlokes, with a lot of consequences. And then Hillel paskin like one way and we make the calendar according to one. But what's pshat in this argument? Is it that one of them forgot what Moshe Rabbeinu said? What do you think?
Because Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the original.
Because God told Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't God tell Moshe Rabbeinu exactly how it moves? What's the speed how long does it take for the sun to make a full circle?
So something got lost in the interpretation?
So people erroneously think that if there's a machlekes and mitzias, someone lost, something got lost. And we hope that with Hashem's help, the halacha got the right one. That's not the way Hasidus learns it. It's gavaldik. So this is the Hasidic understanding of it. And the Gemara says, when you have an argument, it's such a funny Gemara. Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel were arguing for 3 years. Before them, there was very little argument. It really began, we're speaking about now 2,200 years ago. Before 2,200 years ago, we know the first argument that's recorded. It means before that, there was no argument. Whatever God told Moshe, we did. Having said that, Rashi Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin was from the times of Moshe. It means from the times of the desert, there were different ways of doing things. But Moshe Rabbeinu himself said, God said, until this point, now how to bring it all the way down, he didn't tell us. So from the beginning, some people extrapolated from using certain systems this way or that way. That doesn't bother us. What bothers us is that if God did tell Moshe, if there is a machlekes, does it mean that we forgot the right version? We don't know which one is the right version. So the Gemara says, Beisham and Beisela were arguing, and they couldn't come to an agreement until a heavenly voice came out. And the heavenly voice said, Elu va'elu divrei elikim chayim. This opinion and that opinion are both the words of the living God. But halacha is like Beisela. Now, what does that mean? What do you think that means? It's like when two people are having an argument, so you want to make everyone feel good, you're right, and you're right, but we're going to go out with what you're saying.
It would make you think that Beis Shammai is wrong.
So, exactly. So how can God say, in other words, if you're making peace to human beings that are small people, and if you're going to tell two parties you're wrong and you're right, the wrong party maybe won't accept it because they were like belittled. If you're speaking to great, these were great people. If halacha kibesilo, why do you have to say elu ve'elu divrei elikim chayim? Who are you appeasing? They were debating. Finally, God did us the kindness of saying, you know what, I'll tell you. I'll pull back the curtains. Halacha kibesilo, finished, geendikt. Elu ve'elu divrei elikim chayim is a very important message. It's not a PR. It wasn't to make any side feel good. And Hasidus says like this. You have many worlds, even though we learn about Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya, there's crazy worlds, like millions of worlds. When many people are looking, are there aliens, they're onto something. I'm not saying the Rebbe said he didn't have an opinion whether there are or not intelligent life embodied in some sort of goof. The Rebbe says the Torah never rules it out. The Rebbe didn't say yes or no, but it's possible. But Avada, there's aliens. Malachim, neshamas, oilamas. That people know intuitively, this is not the whole thing. Can't be this is the whole thing. There's a lot of stuff out there. Yes. Oh, you bet there is. The whole physical universe, the universe that has, I don't know, trillions of stars, all of that, compared to what's really out there, is mamish nothing. As little as we are, imagine, in the context of the whole universe, the universe, the Gashmistic universe, compared to the Olam Yetzira, the Olam Yetzira is a universe that's infinitely greater. There's taka meshuga, what's, because since God is infinite, that's the word. So when God creates, it's mamash infinite. It's like infinite.
There's, so it's not about not believing that things exist, it's just about disagreeing as to the source of it. Because once you create a theory, then you are limiting God.
What do you mean by that? As to the source?
I'm saying, like, if you are sourcing any creatures or beings or bones or findings to a specific source, then you're ruling that it's not, the source is not from God, right?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Like, if you're finding dinosaurs or whatever, okay, and you're stating that it's dated to a certain amount of years, well, and you're tracing it back to evolution or whatever it may be, then you're putting God out of the picture, correct? Why?
Well, let me, I don't know. I can say it like this. One thing is clear. We're getting off topic, but it's good to get this clear. And the Rebbe writes it to so many people. The Rebbe was troubled that people are troubled with dinosaurs.
Okay.
Is that why is the question whether dinosaurs did or did not exist, how does that bechlal affect the emes of Torah?
Okay.
They discovered waters on Mars. Ooh, now there's a problem with the Torah. Why? Did the Torah ever write there's no waters on Mars? But nothing. The issue is the age of the world, not dinosaurs. The age of the world. The way science knows how to carbon date, how to extrapolate from now how old it is, according to their measurements, the world is very, 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 very old. Let's assume that they more or less have it right. Let's go with that. Even though, go through history, go through the past 2,000 years, more or less every 100 years, there has been so many upgrades in the chachma of science that many things that was for sure a scientific fact 100 years prior became refuted. There's no reason to say that 100 years from now, there's going to be so much more scientific knowledge that many givens today will be refuted. It always happened until now. So first of all, who says that science has it right today? But even if the way they are dating is more or less correct, the Torah tells us, the Gemara says it. I mean, Torah means the Torah doesn't write it explicitly. But the fact that we say that God created everything in 6 days, the Torah writes that. And we take that literally. So the Gemara asks a question. Many creatures get sustenance, it's amazing, off something else that's rotting. Many things. I think about fertilizing. It's not a nice thing to think. But fertilizing makes the earth grow better. That means that the garbage of one life form becomes the food of a lower life form. And this is in creation all over. So the Gemara speaks about certain small bugs or worms that for them to live, they only get sustenance off rotting wood. So it's a very good example where the Gemara says, God made the world in 6 days. For this word to rot, it takes X amount of months, it takes time. So how did those worms, God did not create those worms a few months later. Everything was created in the 6 days. So how did those worms survive before they had the rotting wood? So answers the Gemara, it must be that God created the world with wood that already was rotting. That means that the world was not created
brand new.
And the Gemara gives another additional proof. Again, this is based on our tradition. And it also fits with the narrative of the Chumash, that Adam and Chava were 20-year-olds. But hold on, but they were created on the sixth day of creation. Yeah, but God created them already developed. So if Adam and Chava, think about it, let's say what we know of human beings, forget about human beings live 120 years, 100 years. That means they were created already a fifth into their lifespan. That's a big chunk. Let's say the universe, the way it is right now, even according to the scientists, they have to have a number, is going to last for X amount of years, and then it's going to implode or explode, whatever their understanding is right now. Good. So let's say that when the world was created, it was created already a fifth into that. Look, there were people that made cheshbonis, it's taken more or less what they're saying. God created the world in 6 days, but the world was already, it was a, I don't know what they say, 15 billion or 16 trillion, I don't know, that number. It's bechlal not a stira. In other words, if the Torah would have written that God created the world 0 kilometers, that's a Brazilian expression, or it's brand new, then it's a problem. The Torah acknowledges that the world was created with rotten wood. So could be God created the world with the bones in the ground? You have to know why. Or could be dinosaurs existed. The Rebbe writes, this could have been, that could have been. It's like a strange. Why do people feel this challenge is a Torah? I never understood. It never bothered me. I never understood that from a people when I was growing up. Oh, don't talk about dinosaurs. In the ground, you have bones of creatures that we call them dinosaurs, of huge creatures. Again, whether they lived and they died, whether God put those bones in the ground. One thing is for sure, that God created an old world. Part of an old world is having fossils. What happens if, just like after 6 months, the Gemara says, that wood rots. What happens when a world talk is long for who knows how many years? What's going to happen? There's going to be fossils in the ground. Taka, God made an old world. It's authenticated with what the Gemara says. So that's been again that.
Was time always consistent? Like, was what we consider day always?
The only time that we know the time is not what we consider now, that's another point that the Rebbe writes in that letter, is that during the entire 365, so to say, year of the Mabul, the heavenly bodies were not moving the way they're moving now. There was no day and night.
So things changed after that, right?
No, that means that during that period, that's another point that the Rebbe writes. The Rebbe writes that we don't know, according to the way we understand science now, if things stop spinning, they will stop existing. Mamish. Everything is spinning. Not only in the little, even the little Adam Lach is mamish turning, and the world is spinning, and the solar system is spinning. Nothing was spinning. You have noch, I don't know if it's Avodah Zarah because it's connected to Islam, but there's a whole branch of Islam called the Sufis. The way they connect to God is by spinning. Because life as we know it is spinning.
Right.
The emes is that the Eibishter is stationary. God is the spinner. Okay, so they don't have the Torah, they don't know that. But there's many ruchnis that means between God and this world, movement and spinning is a phenomenon. So since the way the world was spinning for 1 year is not the way it's spinning right now, how would that affect age? We don't know.
Does it have anything to do with adrenal?
Could be interesting. In other words, it can go design that God created the world only 20 years old or whatever. But because of what happened during the Mabul, it mamish affected age in a way that we don't know of. The Rebbe writes, that's the Rebbe's father. We don't know. And we'll find it. I think it's important to become curious. Mm-hmm. How did it happen? And if the dinosaurs did live, nothing wrong. Why did they die? The Rambam writes, the mitzvah of knowing God, since God himself is not knowable, is to learn about creation. The Rambam writes that learning any chachma of science, that's why the Rambam learned all the chachmas, is part of the mitzvah of knowing God. We're going to learn about this in a moment over here. Knowing. So I'm coming back over here. So there's many universes. And another thing about age, speaking about age, Taka, why would it be dinosaur bones in the ground? Like, why would God do that? If they never lived, just to give a fake news, to make a fake appearance. Oh, this is the word. That everything, there's many universes, but they're not independent. They're linked. Not only are they linked, each universe is reflecting the one above it in a more gashmizdik way. So every time you go into a lower world, it's the same concept, becoming more nizgashim, becoming more concrete. Now, for us, anything above Olam Asiya is already spiritual, but that's relative to us. We are in the lowest rung in the chain. But Olam Yetzira, which is greater than the whole universe, well, it's already relative. Compared to Asiya, it's ruchniyistik. Compared to Briya, it's also gashmiyistik. But each one is mirroring nishtal shulumahen from the world above it. Now, how does time, so in this world we are familiar with time and space. In the world of Yetzira, time and space is not the way it is here. But there is the concept, lefiyerech, that world of time and space. There is time and space. Because if there would not be time and space in the world of Yetzira, then we would not have it over here. And Kabbalah speaks a lot about where did it begin. So just to know the words in Kabbalah, that Chachma and Bina of Atzilus is the source of Zman, and the six emotional attributes, Zoh of Atzilus, is the origin of Makim. But it doesn't go Atzilus, Zman in this world. Chachma and Bina of Atzilus create Zman in Bria in a whole different way. But there is a concept of past, present, and future. And that becomes more Nizgashim in the world of Yetzirah. And then it is the way we know it. We don't know time in any other way. Let me tell you what we do know. What we do know about time is, and the Gemara speaks about it, in the whole sugya of dreams, is that a dream, in the world of a dream, something can feel like a very long time, mamish, and it's rega kememra, I mean a split second. And then we have stories of Baal Shem Tev, you have these famous stories that there was someone in his group, one of his talmidim, that they were basically, they didn't work for them. and he decided he's letting go, not just of Chassidus, of the ganze Yiddishkeit. So he walks out of the Baal Shem Tov's room. It's a gewaltic, long story. The story is, it's a 15-year story. How he left, and he got completely, and then how his life evolved, and he got into a lot of trouble. And at the end, he decided, you know what? I'm going to go get a bracha from the Baal Shem Tov. And that took one instant. And when he walked back into the Baal Shem Tov's room to get a bracha, the Baal Shem Tov told him that if you will choose to leave, you saw what would happen. And at the end, you're coming back anyways. So why didn't you just stay over here? Who are you going to come back? Stay. It worked for him. But it just shows you that the way we experience time is experienced very different in different places. So something very little here, in the Ruchnisdik world can be very big. The opposite way. Something very little here, a very small amount of time here. When you dream, you become less connected to the Gashmi, right? So you become more Ruchnisdik. It feels like more time. So more time, big, becomes little. Big becomes little. Bachal, when you look up to the heavens, how big does the sun or the moon look like? Little. The higher you go, the bigger it becomes. So I'm just giving my own Narasha Svara. Could be that since everything in this world is reflecting greater worlds, so for something that is great, let me go great. If something great, you know how great, if something is little over here, how big is it over there? Humongous. So it almost shows you that in the prior world, in some original world, things were bigger. Yes, everything is bigger. Everything is bigger in the way we understand space. Now, it's really the other way around. Really, things are big here. Like, when you think about God, do you think about God being very big or very little? It's a good kasha.
I don't think you even understand how big he is.
So I see most people in the beginning, they always go into the large. Because in our understanding, the larger, the greater. God is not big, very, from here until there, and beyond.
She did well.
That's emes. We should do the opposite also. So when we have the words that we are clearly taught, that God isn't only soivev, God is memali. It means God is not only around everything, God is in everything. God is in everything. That's going in the opposite direction.
Small.
God is infinitely small, not small. God is infinitely small. So if you go in between infinitely small and infinitely big, what size do you get? I think us. We're mamash in between.
I was going to choose from a child's perception that a child, when you talk to them about God, it's very hard for them to understand. They ask a million questions.
Okay.
But then I would think that children probably just create their own image of
what
it's like, so they're confining it, whereas the older we get, the more abstract it seems.
But when we see what you did with your hands intuitively, when we think about abstract, we go into the large.
Okay.
And I think that we should also go into the little. But going back to this concept of that there's big creatures in a different world, in a prior. So there's prior worlds, the Ruchnisdik worlds, and in our and things that are bigger. Yeah, humongous. Monsters, grois. And in the old world, you had Oig, and you had the people that Adam was a giant. I don't think when we're little, the smaller we are,
the bigger things look.
The concept of Shneshtal Shlomihem means is that the reason why there will be things in this world, even if they never lived on the surface, is because in Ruchnisdik worlds they existed. And they exist. And everything that is there is reflected over here. So there's a chain. So Hasidus, the Rebbe writes like this, that in every single world, there's a different type of solar system. Not, God forbid, Gashmias, but the physical, there's a system, there's a sun and there's a moon, and they're moving, and there's day and there's night. All of these things exist in higher worlds on a Ruchnisdik way. when Hashem says Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim Chaim, what God was saying is that in one ruchnius-dika world, the movement beruchnius is like Shmuel says, 365 and a quarter. In another ruchnius-dika world, the movement is like the other opinion. So everyone is taka telling you an emes in a different world.
Are there people in all these worlds?
So the way we would word it is neshamas and malachim. Don't use the word people. People means that whatever that is, the neshama, is embodied in something gashmi. What you do have, and we have this continuously in Kabbalah, is that in every world, the neshama needs a garment. That means the neshama without a garment cannot interact. But the garment is a ruchnius-dika garment. But we would call that neshamas and malachim.
So how does this fit in with the whole concept of like being born into this world and then going to what we call Olam HaEmes, which is...
which is the source of this world.
The
what's the kash?
Yeah. Like when we die, our souls go there. But then you're telling me there's lots of other worlds with...
So let's go. So you're saying that there's Gan Eden Atachten, there's no mamish like this.
So all these worlds are up there, so to speak, the different levels.
Different
where
levels.
The shamas go.
Yeah, and the point is that they're all linked one to the other. It's not the way you think cold. You go to outer space if you're going to Mars over there, then you're all far. There's an interconnection between one and the other. One is not separated from the other. One is higher than the other. One is more abstract than the other. So it's, but it's the source of the other. And then even the shamas that are not zoicha to go to Gan Eden or Elyon, which is in the world of Bria, but on Shabbos they go there. And they speak about this fiery elevator of light that they go, how they go, how do they go from when there's ways, there's like vehicles that they travel from one place to the other. It's gewaldic. So all of the shitas that are not that we made up, that the Tanoim have, that the Moroim, in other words, the opinions that are brought down, is because every world has a Torah. Every world has a Torah. And every opinion is saying a real emes. That's the way Hasidus understands Torah. So it's mamash holy. No one has it wrong. In this world, only one opinion is right. Because the question is, what is this world now connected to? To which oilam? So you can make a mistake what the halacha is. In halacha, halacha kebeisilum. In halacha b'shama, you're wrong. But it's not pshat you're wrong because what God told Moshe was forgotten and you misheard or something happened and now you have wrong information. No. God told Moshe many things that an Olam HaBriya goes this way. And then people confused one statement to halacha when that statement is not la halacha. That gives so much covet to the whole Torah. Because the staka means that every opinion in the Torah is Elu va'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. And all of that is connected to this concept of Shenishtal Shel Mehem. And coming back to Golos, you know what Golos does in the negative is that Golos severs the connection of this world to any of these worlds. It's severed. So you know what happens if it's severed? So if something Beruchnius is functioning in a certain way, never, if it would be complete, they would die. But there's a severance, there's a cutoff, there's a lack of circulation. So if something, Beruchnius, functions on a certain way, so Chazal speak about certain biological facts, then you say that the biology today doesn't work that way. The answer could be, either the Gemara is speaking about biology in a different world, and this is from another world, or that when Mashiach will come, this is the way things should be. When this world is properly connected to the higher worlds, then this is the way this world is going to function. Why are we functioning differently? Is because there's a severance. The person, theoretically, we'll go back to the beginning, Adam was going to live forever. Why was Adam going to live forever? How can a body live forever? Because if the connection between the body and the neshama is perfect, the neshama is forever. So if the Shenashtal Shelo Mehem means one evolved from the other, but if that connection remains, then the attributes of the higher world will be imprinted on the lower world. Forever, Neshama, is imprinted in the body. Avera is disconnect. Disconnect affected death. That's the meaning of the punishment. It's a consequence. What does death mean? That you're not fully connected to your source. It's shenashtal shalomehem, but there's a severance. And these are ruchnis, the good things.
Or the clogging?
Oh. Yeah, we want to do a clogging. I'm saying this is a big part of the avoid of a tzaddik that we're not even aware of, is that when a tzaddik sees a person, Chassidim, we want it to be near a tzaddik. We go today to the oil. That doesn't change. Why? Not because of what the tzaddik will tell me. Not because of what. It's because the koyach of the tzaddik who had the perfect alignment of ruchnis and gashmis, that's the model of a yid that lived exactly the way the neshama wants to live, that is contagious. That reconnects a severance that we could have had from our ruchnisdika source. And that can bring a person healing. Many times a person is sick is because their body is not functioning the way the neshama's body is functioning, the way the levush is functioning. Why not? Because there was a severance. So reconnect. That goes for everything else. But this is a yesoid in Kabbalah, the concept of shenashtal shalom. So there are many worlds, but they're connected one to the other. At least they should be connected one to the other. And especially when we keep the mitzvahs properly, we fortify that connection. So coming back, so the reason we have in our nefesh and in our ruach and in our neshama 10 sfidas is because who are we? We are the neshtal shalom from ultimately, go back, go up, go up, go up, go up, go up, you're going to come to the world of Atzilus. Not that the world of Atzilus is the beginning of the chain, is the beginning of everything. The beginning of everything is God. But God cannot be defined. So when you want to start defining the neshama, you cannot go higher than the 10 spheres of Atzilus. In Perek Beis, last chapter, the Alter Rebbe was going higher than Atzilus. When he said that we are God's son, like we learned, God's child, the etzem, you blow from your innards. And indeed, just to have it clear, that Tanya Perek Beis is speaking what we would call, in the words of Hasidim, the etzem ha-neshama. The essence of my soul is discussed in chapter 2 of Tanya. Perek Gimel is going to speak about the next level down, which is called the 10 koiches, the 10 powers of the soul. The 10 powers of the soul is not the essence of the soul. It's a power. A power, you can say, it's a potential. Let's use the word, it's a tool. I'm sure there are many other words. None of them fully fit the meaning of koyach, but that's not the essence. The essence is chapter Perek Gimel. Why do I have 10 spheres? Is because my neshama, a Jewish neshama, is mamish, ultimately linked to the 10 spheres of Atzilus. And they are hanachlokos. Lishtayim, they are divided into two categories. And this is very important. And the two categories themselves, each one is divided into subsections. So you have 10 into sections, into subsections. Shehem, Shalosh Imois, three mothers. Who knows what the three mothers are? Don't we have four mothers? Huh? You probably heard, you forgot sometimes. Huh? Yeah, but what's the meaning of mothers? This term is used only once here.
It's a measurement, no?
So I guess Amma is a measurement. Here it's Imois.
Without the hay?
It's more with the chirik.
Okay.
Yeah? It means mothers. It's from Aim. It's Aim in plural.
Okay.
In Sefer Yetzirah, the beginning of Sefer Yetzirah divides the letters of the Aleph Beis, or 22 letters in the Aleph Beis, into three categories. And those are the words, Shalosh Imois. Three letters are called mother letters. Then you have Sheva Kfulois. You have seven letters that are called double letters. Then you have Yud Beis Pshutois. Then you have 12 letters that are called simple letters.
About the Aleph
Mem
and
Tav? Oh, Aleph Mem Mem?
Sham?
No.
Shin?
Yeah. Yeah, Shin.
The Tav isn't considered one?
No.
Okay.
And that's Bechlal. I mean, it's interesting to see that. We can learn that another time. But there's a whole Chachma of Taka, how do words function? Where do they come from? And how do they combine into words? And how do they carry their carriers? They carry chachma. They carry feelings. It's a whole to-do. God created the world with letters. So he doesn't even speak about words. He speaks about the letters. Three mother letters. The three mother letters are Aleph, Mem, and Shin. They are the source of air, water, and fire. And Aleph, Mem, and Shin are the sources of the letters of God's holy name. Now, God's holy name has four letters, but really, the hey is repeated twice. So the three letters of a yud and a hey and a vav, they are really sheneshtal shalu. Where did they come from? According to the Sefer Yetzirah, from Aleph Mem Shin. Wow. You know what Aleph Mem Shin stands for? Yesterday. Yesterday means the source. Don't think about the negative past. Think about up, like it comes from there.
So that's in Chabad Elitzilus, and before that there is no time, you said.
There's no time. And even though it says there's no time, Datken Chabad Chassid is that we go into all of these levels. It says there is no time.
B'chlal. But that is still the past.
But still, first of all, it's still the past relative to time, before time. But even in there itself, the fact that you have any, if there's anything that the Chabad Chassid is, that is the essence of God, than anything else, which would be, let's say, God's infinite light. There's the Atzmus and Oyed and Soif. So Chassidus argues that it's connected to time. Because which one caused the other? Is it the infinite light causes God's essence, or is God's essence the essence and it causes the infinite light? So there's cause and effect. Cause and effect means time. Because you have to have,
right.
Even if they happen at the same time, but conceptually, it's the concept of time.
Could it be a different type of time? That's what I'm thinking.
There's many different types of time.
So what does that look like? Is it the speed of time, or is it the...
So I would say like this, that if you want to, it's very abstract. L'chayra, until Atzilus, it's just a different speed. Mm-hmm. But I thought you were saying that even before Atzilus, it's a different type of time. But there was something there.
Isn't it how we perceive it?
Everything is about how we perceive. Let's begin with that. Because God only perceives God, and there's taka nothing other than God.
Because for God, there really is no time limitation, so it's all about
how it has we to be us.
It, right?
In other words, even if there's time, past, present, and the future for God is also in the past.
It's something that's very hard to grasp, but
you know what makes it easy for us to grasp? That in the past itself, yesterday and 2 days ago are in the same time by me now. What I don't experience is the future and the past together. But we say the word past. Hold on.
Past refers to everything
from now all the way back.
Right. But also our memories aren't so linear. It's just one big past. We don't necessarily differentiate in our mind.
You're making my point even more. That I think the greater the mind, the less linear, the more we combine things,
right, exactly.
Even though that before it happened, it was in the future. Then it was in the present. But the moment it hits in the past, somehow, it all takes up the same amount of time.
It's a culmination of all the knowledge and all of the events and everything that we put in, all the clues.
Correct.
It's one picture.
It's one picture. And I think, no, we have the koyach to rearrange it the whole time.
So it just makes me think that, in addition to everything, here we're focusing on the opposite of time limitation.
Yes, we are. Okay.
So when people say, like, you're stuck in your past, get over it sort of thing. I mean, I'm talking very generically.
Okay.
Basically, it's talking also about connecting to God and like accepting that he's the one that is in charge and letting him be in charge.
Okay.
That he rules everything. Because if everything in the past is all one thing, then we should be focusing really on the future, right? Where the details are, everything's more detailed as opposed to the past, which is all one big picture altogether.
Okay, I agree with everything that you're saying. We are affected by our past,
right.
And I think the koyach that we have is that we can, the way I see it, is that we can rearrange our past. It means even if to me Monday,
yeah,
in the past came before Tuesday,
yeah,
it could be that if I would figure out that not to be so linear and place the event of Tuesday before Monday, then the sum total picture will be different, which will be to my benefit.
But isn't that also because we're creating worlds with our thoughts, and then those worlds have effect on.
Well, I think, I'm saying, what?
You know?
The past being all one glump doesn't mean it's not significant. It just means it doesn't take up time.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we're going to remember that when we were little, and when events from when we were much younger and events from when we were much older. But we don't sit sorting out that happened this amount of years ago and that happened that amount of years ago every single time we think of it.
Correct.
But I guess the point I'm trying to say is, not so successfully, that when we think about God, we think it's still limited in our perception of time limitations.
I know, that's a problem. We're stuck with that.
Well, it's very scary to think that time, you know, like, I think this, you know, like with the Beis HaMikdash, right? And that whole thing that, you know, the time, the place in the
okay.
Right, in the Kodesh Kodashim where it basically stops. And if you think of Hashem as infinitely tiny instead of infinitely huge, it's a very scary thought for us because we are Yesh, we are something. So to think of things not existing at all is kind of horrifying. In a way.
It's crushing.
It's very scary.
Okay, correct.
So I think that's why, like, our minds limit us in order to save us from that fear. You know?
I think that's why also, over so many years, so many people are so opposed to talking about Mashiach. Because I don't think it's so much the concept of Mashiach. Sure, we've wanted Mashiach for thousands of years, and we say Ani Mamin, but on the other hand, actually talking about Mashiach and being more detailed about Mashiach comes, it's something that
we're limiting it somehow.
We don't really know what's going to be. We know the way life is right now, and we're comfortable with what we have. It makes people uncomfortable
frightened
about situations that they don't know about.
Correct. Like we are always afraid of that which we don't know.
That's when everything goes back to pre-creation format, and time changes, and our neshama becomes so purified that we just go back to total oneness. That's a scary thought because we have such
correct
big egos. You know?
Correct, correct, correct.
It's horrifying. So I think that's why people kind of get stuck with the Mashiach thought. Like, oh my God, like, do I want to go back to that place where my neshama just...
I think that's on more of the neshama level, but I don't know how many people are actually at the level to think of that part of it. It's more about, like, I'm comfortable in my house or the way life is, like... Sure, I'd like that to be, you know,
a little bit better, but don't
get the trouble. But like, hey, it's something that I've never seen or I don't know about. That's frightening to me. I don't want to know.
Correct,
about it.
Correct, correct.
Stop talking about Mashiach so much. Like,
then again, a tzaddik would want that, right? Who were we just talking about this with? Yitzchak.
You can speak about just right. an adventurous person.
No, not even like the newness of a new type of a world, but. The whole like Ratz of a Show thing,
Shabbos, correct.
Right, and then basically Yitzchak wanted to be Batul Metzius to Hashem. That's what the tzaddik wants, but I don't understand.
It's called pachad. It's called pachad Yitzchak. Taki, he was filled with pachad.
He was afraid when he.
It's an experience of pachad.
So why would he want something that he's so afraid of?
He wasn't looking for the fear. He wanted to be close to God.
But he was still afraid.
No, and his want brought him close to God. And the closer he had to God, then the more his existence became farpachat. It became shooken up.
And he was afraid?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, tzaddikim that they couldn't stand. They would fall from fear.
Oh my gosh, okay.
It's an experience.
I thought they just liked it. Like it was enjoyable.
I think that you want to... Lahavdil, maybe it's a bad muscle. How many things is the world of the entertainment providing that makes you afraid? And people pay to get afraid. Lahavdil a billion times.
Because
they want an experience
something that even subconsciously, they're obviously looking for something to give them a different experience, fulfill them in some way.
I got it. They want the experience. A tzaddik is not looking for the experience. A tzaddik is looking for God.
Because there's no option.
Because he wants to be connected to God. Okay, ultimately. And if that brings about a pachad, so be it. What can I do?
Right, because there's no option.
Okay, well, no option. Got to do it.
So you're just saying that they'll go in blind, and if it brings along some fear along the way, then hey, they'll just take it because... That's just the pathway.
That's the, yeah.
Okay.
So coming back over here, just the three mothers are three letters. And the Alter Rebbe here, which is a very mystical two liners, he's connecting the 10 spheres to the letters, which is a big thing. So the three emois, he's saying, as we'll see in a moment, is connected to the three intellectual koichos of the nefesh. And then, just to know what they are, the seven double, there are seven letters that could be pronounced two ways. We Ashkenazim don't celebrate all seven. We don't actually speak about the seven. Even the Yemenites, who have the most precise Aleph Beis, one was purposefully hidden when the first temple was destroyed. Mm-hmm. That's the Reish. Now, the seven letters is Beged Kapoiris. Beis, Gimel, Dalet. So Beis, we know, Beis, Veis. Gimel, Jimel, that everyone knows. The letter G, we have that in the Aleph Beis. So it's Giz with a dot, and without a dot, so with the dot is strong, Beis, Veis. Gimel, strong, Jimel is without a dot. Then there is Dalet is with a dot, and then there is the TH sound. That's a Dalet. It's amazing.
So is that like the level of Machlokes kind of?
Well, in Kabbalah, it's a lot that the strong is can lead to something severe, and the soft is better. Soft.
No, meaning when we started the class, we were talking about two opinions that come down, and you have to make a decision between the two.
In halacha.
So is that the same level? Like once it comes down to the same level as those seven letters, that's when the division starts?
Could be.
But in terms of...
Could be. Yeah. It's the same letter, but it's already... It could be two ways. Could be. It's a machloikis. So gimel, jimel, dalet, and the. Yemenite sometimes mamish pronounce that. Then chof we have. Kapoir is chof and kof. Pei is pei and fei. The last one is tough and soft. And the reish, no one knows.
So that's the hidden one?
That's the hidden letter.
So all those six are the one we have a dagesh in or not, right?
All the seven have dagesh in. We don't pay attention to it. Open up so many sedurim. They have the dagesh without the... We don't...
When you learn dikduk.
Right, yeah. So these letters are called the double letters. And the double letters are connected to the seven emotions. And Alter Rebbe Bechlal doesn't address the other 12 Na'amon Sefer Yetzirah. He does so many things with this, but not this. Everything other than this. That's what he says, that the three letters, Aleph Mem Shin, is Yud Kei Vav. And then he goes to the seven letters and everything in the universe, seven days of the week, and the seven seas and the seven continents, Alsa, seven, and then the 12 is the 12 months of the year and the 12 tribes of Israel. The whole Sefer Yetzirah is correlating. Everything in the world comes from the letters. And in the world, you have things by three, by seven, and by 12. That's the Sefer Yetzirah. Here, the Alter Rebbe is beginning, for some reason, there's a reason for that. Six mothers and the seven doubles, what are they? Peirush, Chachma, Bina, and Das are the three mothers. This Shiva, as you may have been in the 7 days of the building, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, etc. These are the 10 spheres. So now says the Rebbe, V'kach b'nefesh ha'adam, and the same is in the soul of man, same of a soul of a yid, that being that sheneshtal shalu, our neshama is linked to Atzilus. In Atzilus is 10 koiches. So our neshama has 10 koiches, which is, as in Atzilus, the 10 is divided into 2. In our neshamas, it's also shenechlekes l'shtayim, it's divided into 2. What are the two general names? Seichel and Midas. The Seichel, the intellect, includes Chachma, Bina, and Das. The Midas include love of God, Pachdoi, being in fear of God, being in awe of God. Then Ulefa'aroi, seeing the beauty in God, that's Tiferes, etc. The Chabad, Nikro, Imois. Chabad is called the mothers. How? Because they are the source of the Midas. A mother is the source of the offsprings. So the Alter Rebbe is innovating, Chiddush, and he's saying that all of the emotions are offsprings of intellect. Ki hamidos in toldos Chabad. And that's going to be a very important tool that the Alter Rebbe will use later when the Tanya becomes a guidebook of how to better serve God. And everyone has a Yetzer Hara, and my instinct wants me to do A, and God tells me to do B. So the words we have is Mayach Shalat al Alev. We'll get to a lot about that later. This is based on the concept that emotions are children of parents. That's such a good mashal. Because think about your children. They're independent. So what influence do you have over them when they become healthy, independent children? Yeah, but is it up to you or is it up to them?
Up to them.
It's up to them to choose, but the midos is something that they see that you do.
Correct. Well, that there is a big impact that that a mother has on their child. She gives birth, and she continuously has an influence. So there's a link between Seichel and Midas, which is why, as we'll get through the Tanya, in a few times, we're going to use the concept that we're not speaking about suppression. We're speaking about direction. Big difference. Suppression can never be done indefinitely. Direction means, think about a good parent. The child is getting every emotional experience that they need, but who's directing it? The mother. There's a time to make a mess, and there's a time to be neat, and there's a time to be quiet. So all of these things are finding expression. A mother is not going to, you can never do this, you can never do that. Now is not the time and place. You want to paint? Okay, don't paint on the wall, paint on the paper. You want to make whatever the mashal is. You know, there's a certain relationship that the seichel continuously has on the midas, and that will be a tremendous power that we should tap into when we need to. Because the midas is the hardest thing to contain. The midas are all over the place. You wake up, you're in a good mood, you're in a bad mood. And we have the power through our seichel. We have to figure out how to direct the midas. Because Chabad is the mother. And the midas are the descendants. And we'll to be continued.
Thank you. Thank you so much.